A new project out of central Wisconsin looks to capture the voices of a group of people that we don't always hear from, our state's rural residents.
Through a series of oral interviews, the People of Rural Wisconsin Project looks to share the stories of rural residents throughout the state. It also hopes to answer some pretty big questions about the relationship between place and identity and why that matters in today's globalized world.
Joining us now is Matt Groshek. He's Senior Lecturer of Graphic Design at UW-Stevens Point, a faculty fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Public Policy and Service, and he's the Project Director for People of Rural Wisconsin. He joins us now from our studio in Wausau. Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Veronica and Rob. Thank you for having me.
So we mentioned it a bit there in the intro, but in your words, what is the People of Rural Wisconsin Project all about?
Right now and in the past, recent past, it's been about collecting oral histories from people that have lived in rural places or live in rural places currently in Wisconsin. That's the short version. I think it's also looking to really listen to people's stories and histories so we can understand better what's going on in those places.
Let's elaborate a little bit more on that. Why do you think it's so important that these stories get told, get shared?
I think that in our culture in particular in other places, we sort of discount rural. It's often defined as what isn't urban. And really, Wisconsin, a large part of it is a rural place. I think that we need to pay attention again to the continuum between what's rural and urban as a way to understand all those places. And those stories help us shape an understanding of that.
Now, as you're talking to people and collecting these interviews, what kind of questions are you asking?
Questions really range from, what they think rural is, how they came to live in a place, what their work is in those places, what they believe their life values are in those places. Their relationships with the land, I think, enter into this. In the end, a lot of questions have to do with identity and place. I mean, something that you've already identified.
Can you give us a sense of the scope of different people that you've talked to so far, the age range and, the different professions? Who are they?
I mean, that's been pretty broad in some ways. It's across the state geographically. When the project began, Ed Janis, who was a public historian, initiated this project. He was very much interested in people who had been in farming, dairy farmers, and especially an aging population. So a lot of the stories come from people that are older, that live in rural places or have lived there. And some of them are farming. Some of those people are working in small towns in different sorts of jobs. It really depends on, what was available and what contacts were had early on. So we do want to change some of that. I think right now we're looking to expand the project, and that's kind of where the project's going. So we look for more.
And when you approach someone to do this, what's been the general response? Is it, oh my gosh, yes, I'd love to tell my story, or wait, what? And it takes some trust building to get them going?
Well, I think it's a combination. I think people are eager to tell their stories, and I think people who live in rural places in particular may feel a bit disenfranchised by not having their stories heard. So it really depends on the person. Some people are very eager to talk. They're great at telling stories. They want to do this. Other people are a little reluctant. I know I have neighbors that I've been asking to participate in the project, and they're like, well, I'm not really sure I want to talk about this, or I'm not really sure I have a sense of what that is. And I always ask them as a question to start that potential conversation is, what do you think rural is? How do you identify yourself as a rural person? And inevitably, there's a moment of hesitation there where they try to frame that in their mind or bring to mind what things they value in a rural place that help shape that identity.
Well, let's listen to some of these stories. You talked to one farmer named George who knew early on that he wanted to be a farmer. Let's take a listen.
When I got out of grade school, I just wanted to go into farming. I didn't want to go to school anymore. So in high school, I was old enough, and there wasn't a law then that you had to go to high school, so I stayed home. I wanted to take up some kind of forestry conservation. Then I had to make the decision. Dad would be alone on the farm. He couldn't do it anymore. He was getting old. So what do I do? Stay home, help Dad, or do I go off to college?
So you spent your life as a farmer happily?
I don't know where the happiness comes in it.
Huh. What do you make of that one? He wanted to be a farmer early on, but he's not sure about the happiness. It's interesting.
It is. I think that, again, that person's life is as complicated as anyone's. I mean, we all struggle with this. What do we do? How do we make choices? What sort of choices do we make that impact our family or ourselves? You know, what do we give up to have something else? What gives us joy or pleasure? What's hard? You know, what's a struggle? Those things are questions that everyone has. This idea of happiness, it's elusive. You ask anyone this question, no matter where they live, and they're going to have a response that may be similar. How do we define happiness? What makes us satisfied? You know, how do we live a full and rich life in place?
Happiness is also kind of a word that's more in vogue now, I think, when you're assessing life quality than it used to be. It used to be you lived a decent life, a moral life, a good life, but it wasn't always about happiness.
Right. I mean, I think that's true. And I think that's another reason to capture these stories. How has that changing sort of value landscape or moral landscape even, you know, what does that mean? How has that been shaped in a prior time? How is it being shaped now? I know that I'm working with young people all the time, every day. And when I talk to them about what matters to them or what has meaning to them, that's shifting all the time.
Well, staying with George's story, he, I guess, faced some difficulties in school. He came from a bohemian background. His teacher wanted to Americanize him more. Here's another excerpt from that interview.
She would come by my desk. Well, she'd walk around the room, you know, and when she'd come to my desk, she would pound on that desk. What's the matter, kid? Ain't you got no brung up? This is my English teacher. And I'd look, oh, my gosh, can I crawl under the desk? And the other kids in the room would be going,
Well, that's probably a common story for immigrants, urban and rural, over the years from a lot of ethnic backgrounds. Have you heard other stories like that in this project?
Yeah, I think there's always something, especially from the older rural residents, that is connected to a sort of transition into a different kind of place. You know, and often that transitions between rural and urban or a place that's not rural, often when they attended school or they were involved in some sort of labor that took them to a different place than maybe often the farm, sometimes just rural. So, that shifting, that sort of story is often retold. I think the other thing is even in younger people, I know there is a sort of disenfranchisement of rural and a discounting. When I was working in Indiana and teaching there, I would ask students, you know, where are you from? What's your story? And often with some again, trepidation and shame even. They'd say, I'm from a rural place. You know, my family grows peanuts or soybeans or whatever. And so, again, I think often the attitude is by people that may be very proud to have grown up and lived in a rural place when they reach a point where they're encountering a different sort of population of people with a different background, they have to rethink how that's viewed.
And I want to hear a little more from this project. Now, one of the other people you talked to spoke of land conservation as not just a way of life, but something that should be revered, respected, and passed on. Here's a clip from that.
It was a given that you were, you know, God had provided you with this land, and it was your obligation to take care of it. You would learn it from the pulpit. You would learn it from your ancestors, so to speak. They would sort of pass it along, that this was a given, that this was something that you would continue.
And Matt, that idea of the land, how did that evolve as you talked to more people?
Well, I think that, again, there was a particular time in our more recent history where the idea of land use, and in particular in relation to agricultural use, was pretty well grounded as an identity in rural Wisconsin. And I think now, you know, and I think when I talk to people that are younger, they recognize the contested landscape of the rural landscape. And if you listen to the news or attend to politics at all, you see that those contested territories impact rural people probably most significantly. So there's a shift now, where people are trying to understand, you know, what does it mean to have a job in a rural place? How is that tied into resources in a landscape that I live in? How do I preserve that landscape or not to maintain its rural character? Again, what do I value? How do I identify with this place? How do I identify as a rural person? So Again, that's changing all the time. And there's 68 interviews. I haven't listened to all of them. Mm. Certainly, there's a lot more in the archive that we've generated to date to certainly mine and look for some of those questions to be answered.
We're talking with Matt Groshek of the People of Rural Wisconsin Project, and we'd like to hear from you, too.
How do you think the place you live in shapes your identity? Did you grow up in a rural area or an urban area? And do you think rural and urban areas have more in common than we might think? Or maybe, as Matt was saying, this idea sometimes that the rural gets passed over, even in Wisconsin, where we have a lot of rural area in the state. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about the People of Rural Wisconsin Project, which looks to capture the stories, the voices of the state's rural residents, and look at some pretty deep questions about place and who we are. You could join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you live in rural Wisconsin, why do you live there? Is that where you grew up and you stayed, or did you have a vision of a place different than where you grew up? What is it about the rural landscape, living in a rural setting, that appeals to you? Is there a story you'd like to share, and how do you see the relationship between where we live and who we are as people? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Matt, we're talking here about rural Wisconsin. What is your connection with the rural in the state?
So I am a rural resident now. I grew up in central Wisconsin in a place called Rudolph, and I actually live there again. So I ended up leaving the area, lived in urban places, Milwaukee, Chicago, Indianapolis, and now I've actually come back to the same property that I grew up on. So I'm, again, a rural resident.
Oh, what is that like coming back again?
So it's funny because people ask this question often, and they ask me about being nostalgic and sort of embracing or engaging that nostalgia. And it's really about coming around again to something that's very different. I mean, I'm a very different person. My life is very different than when I left here. The place is very different. The world is a different place. So it's very exciting to have some connections that persist, especially in the landscape. And there's certain attributes of that landscape that I absolutely love. So it's, for me, it's been really terrific to come back and to have a life that's very different than an urban life and still have some things that are connected to an urban life. So it's been great for me.
Let's check out another one of the interviews that your project has collected for a woman named Margaret. Nature makes her feel like royalty. Here's a little of what she had to say.
We went out into nature, and that was always our delight. I remember Eddie asked me if I wanted to learn how to handle horses, and he let me cut a field of hay, not a whole field, but at least he set me on this thing, and I thought, this is absolutely divine, the fragrance of the hay and the blue sky with a few clouds up above, and here I am like a princess.
Wow, so just rapturous about having the opportunity to get up, lead the horses, and work a field and make her feel like royalty, though this is something that royalty typically probably wouldn't do. Do you get that rapture from a lot of the people talking about the landscape?
Yeah, I think that people communicate that pretty well. Often it's a bit subtle, but you know, other times there's certainly an exuberance about that. I think people describe a kind of rush in experiencing things that are larger than themselves. They're not human. It reminds them of maybe a context that they don't dominate, that something else dominates. And I think people have a rich appreciation for that live in rural places. Often that's a big part of the interview.
Do you think that that is a surprise maybe for people who themselves don't live in rural areas, that there is such passion to the place where these people live? It's not an incidental choice. It's not a failure. It's not somewhere they just landed. It's intention, and it's also joy, like we heard.
Yeah, I think people in urban places, if they've never lived in a rural place, or if a rural place is only that space you drive through as fast as you can to get to an urban place, you know, they may struggle with understanding what that is. And the thing that also comes through the interviews, I think, is that that's not always incredibly beautiful place. pleasurable experience, that part of the experience of rural may be that it's dirty, you know, it's it may offer a struggle, it may challenge someone physically or mentally or emotionally in a way that, and I'm not saying urban places don't do this, but it's different than, it's very different at times than what those challenges are in an urban place. And so, and really this is about people who come from different tribes sort of trying to share stories. And again, it's the value of the project. We get to hear that voice, maybe understand it, find a resonance that is not us in those other things, and realize this person probably goes through similar things that I go through. Maybe the scale is different. Maybe the thing that drives that response is different, but it's existing in the same sort of manner. So,
we'll go to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We have Brian with us in Cumberland. Brian, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to tell us about, Brian?
I do agree, just like the gentleman was talking, I did grow up in a rural area and then never actually left and actually live on the farm that I grew up on. We feel, me and my wife feel, and our kids now are growing in their 22 and 24, that their lives have been very well grounded with the rural community and being on a farm, that when things come up in life and how things don't always go well, or, you know, but and when you grow cattle and stuff, sometimes cattle do not make it. And the kids are very well grounded in life, I think,
Brian,
growing up in a rural area.
Brian, thank you so much for calling. So, Matt, this idea of this is a great place to raise kids, it really connects them with the planet in a way and with reality. Do you hear that a lot?
Yes, I think that comes through often. I think people, and again, this is sometimes about the hardships that you encounter if you live a rural life. And it may be that you're not a farmer, but you're going to see things die. You're going to see things suffer. You're going to see things fail that might be more immediate in their impact in relation to your life in particular. I think, again, urban places have some of the same conditions, but there's often a buffer there. So yes, I think one of the things we're hearing from people is that, you know, raising a family in those particular places has been important, especially. And again, I'm informally asking people some of these questions before I would do an interview with them, and it comes up often.
We're going to hear from another one of your voices now. This is Loretta, a 92-year-old Wisconsin woman who's known to her friends as Dimp.
I don't like the city at all. I always said that I don't want to live in the city at all. My sister, she's dead now, but she lived in Richland Center. And I said, I used to go down there and visit her. And I thought, how in the world can she stand living in town? One time my husband and I took a trip to Canada and we got up there and everybody talked French. We decided to come back home.
That's awesome. She's got such such joie de vivre, and she expresses herself pretty well. What was she like?
And again, I did not meet Dimp. My experience of her is through that interview. So I can't, you know, I can't speak to that personally. But when I hear this, I hear, again, someone who in some ways I think has made up her mind about where she wants to be and the people she wants to be around. In some ways, it might suggest a kind of narrow viewpoint. But again, I think that's common to everyone. You decide, you know, what tribe you want to be around, and where that tribe lives might drive that very much so. So I think there's a delightfulness in how she puts that desire to live in a place. This other notion about I could never live in a city, you hear, again, it's one of the things we hear. I would never want to live there. I've never have decided to move to a city. And again, I think there's another place where do we really represent the urban very well to people that live in rural places, because there's a richness in that in rural places and urban places that, you know, can be found if you have to look for it or if you find yourself in those places. So,
you know, we hear in Wisconsin of a divide. Sometimes it's expressed as Madison and everything else, or Madison, Milwaukee and Green Bay and the small towns and rural areas. Is part of this project, you know, trying to address that, to understand each other's viewpoints and cultures, and hey, maybe we got more in common than we might think?
Yeah, I think when I think of this project and I think of this idea of a polarity between urban and rural, I really think there's a continuum that ranges from, you know, a kind of sense of wildness to rural, semi-rural, suburban, urban, you know, post urban, if you will. There's really a range of experiences that people have. They're connected to place very often and identities. But really, across that continuum, you have relationships that go back and forth all the time. In fact, some of the research recently by some groups investigating rural conditions have found that a lot of people, 100 days out of their year, they're working in an urban place and they live in a rural, site. Or what they're doing is they're living in a rural place and they're commuting to an urban space. And the other thing is, we can't exist in isolation from any of those things. There's a mosaic of place and life opportunities across the state. Those things are all connected in a way that's amazing. And I think we forget those connections, again, because we want to preserve some identity. So I think the project offers, again, a sort of maybe a fuzziness about, what do these things mean and where are they similar? And also, how do we depend on each other? This is about interdependence. And we have it all the time. We can't exist in isolation. I think especially now we have connections to the whole world. How do you frame your personal identity, your sense of place with something that might also include an identity that's a world identity? I mean, these are the questions. They're interesting and exciting, especially in the 21st century.
Matt, thanks so much for sharing these stories with us, and we'll probably check in with you as you take it forward.
Okay. Thank you very much, Veronica and Rob. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about the project.
That's Matt Groshek. He's the project director for People of Rural Wisconsin. Well, I, grew up dirt road. We occasionally got mudded out, cows across the street, cornfield behind us. Now I'm in a mid-sized city, and I don't know, I'm kind of split sometimes. Like, I see real advantages to the way I grew up. Do you ever think, Veronica, of that would be better to raise kids where they can run wild and free?
I miss some of my times in Campbellsport, Wisconsin,
which
one year was left off the map. I guess how insignificant cartographers thought it was. I'm sure it was an oversight. But it was a beautiful place, and I do miss that and the quiet and the peace of it sometimes.
All right. Well, great conversation. Hey, keep sharing your thoughts and stories over at the Central Time Facebook page.